From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. It's Saturday morning, March 7th. Well, rising temperatures and stronger floods are putting rivers at risk. Radio Catskill's Benjamin Land shares how the fly fishing community is adapting to climate change. He chats with Doug Cluth, a licensed fly fishing guide, to learn more.
All these fantastically horrible floods on the Esopus have just killed the fly fishing.
Plus, a new initiative in Northeast Pennsylvania is bringing young people together to spark change for the world around them. It's called Eco Voices. Rosie Starr chats with Michelle Long with Sustainable Energy Education and Development Support about kicking off the project. Plus, the latest from Keith Hubbard's Star Talk Report. But first, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump says U.S. and Israeli airstrikes have devastated Iran's military.
We're doing very well in Iran. You see the result, and it's been amazing. We've knocked out 42 Navy ships, some of them very large, in 3 days. That was the end of the Navy. We knocked out their Air Force. We knocked out their communications, and all telecommunications is gone.
Speaking before a summit with Latin American leaders this morning, Trump also claimed Iran had nuclear weapons and had done the world a favor. Earlier, in a post on social media, Trump said Iran will be hit hard today with parts of the country under consideration for, quote, complete destruction and certain death. The president also said there will be no deal with Tehran except unconditional surrender. The president has invited Latin American leaders to take part in a security summit near Miami. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports the meetings are part of the administration's efforts to reassert U.S. dominance in the region.
The White House says the leaders of 12 countries will be attending, including Argentina, Bolivia, and Ecuador. But two of the largest economies, Brazil and Mexico, are not expected to attend. Benjamin Gedan managed the South America portfolio in the Obama administration. He said it's a big deal that it's even happening, considering the U.S.-initiated war against Iran.
The expectation is always that Latin America will be bumped by a more prominent foreign policy crisis.
The White House says those attending will be signing a joint security declaration that encourages military force against drug cartels. The U.S. military just announced a joint operation with Ecuador to fight, quote, designated terrorist organizations. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
A large storm system is making its way across parts of the central U.S. Anna Spidel of member station WMUK reports a suspected tornado in southern Michigan has killed at least 4 people and injured 12 others.
On Friday afternoon, the National Weather Service issued severe storm and tornado warnings throughout southern Michigan. Storms continued to move east later in the afternoon, with local government officials reporting severe damage to structures and trees. Later in the evening and into the night, the NWS continued to issue severe storm and tornado warnings in Oklahoma, Missouri, and Arkansas. It's part of a storm system across the central U.S. that's expected to produce severe weather and possible tornadoes throughout the weekend. For NPR News, I'm Anna Spidel in Kalamazoo.
Search and rescue operations are underway in parts of Oklahoma after a tornado touchdown, killing at least 2 people. This is NPR.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. The Sullivan County Sheriff's Office has increased local spot checks at sensitive locations following U.S. and Israel's airstrikes on Iran. Iran has since retaliated in a series of airstrikes across the Middle East, and the war has quickly escalated across the region. Sullivan County Undersheriff Eric Chibodi says the county sheriff's office is staying vigilant.
So we've identified potential sensitive locations using our local intelligence center that we are members of, and we've come up with this list, and at this point we are spot checking those locations. We are meeting with people who congregate at those locations and advise them that if they see something suspicious, don't hesitate to call us. Let us come out and check it out. I'd just like to make it clear, we're checking not just Jewish institutions, but we're going to the mosques, because they're potential targets. And some of the more active schools this time of year. So we're basically everywhere.
Djibouti says that local law enforcement is in close communication with religious and cultural institutions across the county.
Well, everyone's concerned, but they've been down this road before. They've done this drill before, so they know what to look for. I'm in touch with those people, in touch with one of the imams, who's one of our community liaisons, and we're paying attention to everything.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has said there are no credible threats to New York, though state police has increased their presence at religious, diplomatic, and cultural sites across New York State. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Well, here at Radio Catskill, we are so fortunate to have our winter and spring interns with us this March, bringing us really, really incredible reporting. Our interns are awesome. They learn how to do everything from, you know, their own original reporting to conducting interviews to mixing their tape and their features. And this morning, we are in for a special treat because we have in our Radio Catskill studios one of our interns, Benjamin Land. Ben, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a treat because you're not usually here in our studios.
Yeah, I made the trek from Long Island, New York, here visiting family and to visit the studio. I've been reporting from across the country a lot of the time in Los Angeles. So it's amazing to be back in the Catskills. Grew up spending a lot of time in Roscoe, New York, and it's just around the corner from here. So it's definitely a feeling of nostalgia.
Oh, that's beautiful. I want to hear a little bit about what brought you to journalism.
Sure. So when I was, this was in 2023, I was debating a career change. I was a few years out of my undergrad, and I received a note from one of my old professors at NYU. He was looking for some of his former students that, you know, he had a good rapport with and felt would be appropriate for this graduate school program at NYU for journalism. So I applied and ultimately got a large scholarship to go back to school, completely changing the trajectory of my career and life. And I embarked on that journey in 2024, and the fall was the first semester that I did of J school. And at the time when I found out, I was in Zanzibar in East Africa volunteering in the rainforest. And then lo and behold, just about a year later, I'm back in the throes of Lower Manhattan. Yeah, I've done a lot of professional reporting since then, some internships elsewhere, mostly print-based, but I've always like had a soft spot for audio. I was part of the WNYU program at NYU, and love radio, love public radio, and I'm just stoked to be here and tell cool stories.
Yeah, and we're super excited to have you on the team and to collaborate together over the next few months. And Ben, you have been working on a number of stories, one of them being about trout fishing here in the Catskill. Tell me a little bit about the story that we're going to hear from you this morning.
Sure. So I had a chance to speak with Doug Kluth. Doug is a fly fishing guide local to the Catskills. He works mainly out of Phoenicia. And he and I discussed his concern with how climate change is affecting his business and most importantly, affecting trout population and fly fishing in our region. So we got into rising river temperatures, biodiversity loss, and what it takes to look after trout in this region. So all that was kind of captured in the conversation that we had.
Well, let's hear that story from Ben in a moment. Ben, thank you again so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
Well, what brought me to fly fishing was my grandfather. When I was small kid, he built a house up in Phoenicia, up in Woodland Valley, and he taught me to fly fish when I was five. He was a really well-known fly fisherman up here. He fished with Lee Wolf and Art Flick. Pretty fantastic guy. Died at 106. And he taught me everything I knew. So my local water was the Woodland Valley Creek and the Esopus Creek. But I fished all over the Catskill Park, you know, all the way from the Schoharie, all over the Beaver Kill, West Branch, East Branch, all those great rivers. So I'm really well versed on all these rivers up in the Catskills, and I've seen a lot of change in all my years on these rivers.
Yeah, so that brings me into my next question. Have you noticed the change being more gradual or sudden in the rivers that you fish in?
There's been a remarkable change in the last 15, 20 years, like 15 years. You know, we used to have 100-year floods very rarely, but now we seem to have them every 5 years. And that really damages the ecosystem, you know. So I've seen my local river, the Woodland Valley, just pancake out, you know, and all these fantastically horrible floods on the Esopus have just killed the fly fishing. And I can tell you how, but it's been really, really bad for us.
Yeah, please elaborate on how that's happened.
One of the things that has been happening with these floods, and, you know, let's not talk about how the heat has changed the river, but the floods have really done the most damage, where we have like a normal flow of like 350 CFUs, and then all of a sudden there's one of these 100-year floods at 30,000, you know, and what that does, that ruins the stream and the stream bank in the ecosystem, where, you know, what these floods do is they tumble the rocks, they erode the banks, they get rid of all the indigenous trees that the roots hold the structure of the stream back. And without those key trees and bushes, it prevents the flies from having a place to breed, you know. And then of course these big floods come by, and when you're on a bridge over one of these storms, you hear these 5 foot boulders cruising down the stream. But what that does is it breaks up the bottom of the stream bank. So all the nymphs that are going to come out the next year, they've now been erased. They've now been washed off the rocks, and the bait fish, all the things that trout need to live, you know, the regular places they go, the holding water, you know, whatever the caddis hatch or the mayfly hatch, you know, all these things now have been reduced to minuscule amounts, which really prevents these fish from, you know, having a good stable ecosystem, you know, and that means good fishing. You know, the fish don't have flies to eat on. They don't have good bait fish. They don't have the crayfish or the sculpins or whatever they're eating. You know, it's really diminished their food source.
How would you say climate change has affected your business?
Yeah, I mean, it's affected my business where, let's say, I've got four people that want to go out and fish on the weekend, and they've been planning this for a month, right? All of a sudden, we're in a heat wave, you know, for the last like 2 weeks. And they really want to go fishing. And the water is up to like 69, 70 degrees. It's really hard for me to take people out and fish for trout, because I know there's a really good chance you're going to kill these fish, you know? So either I have to find water that's going to be less affecting on the trout's health, or I have to target different species. You know, right now, a lot of times we go for smallmouth in the summer, because they're going to head back to the reservoir in July and August, and they're in some of the warmer water as they go back. So, and they're a good fish. They have great fights, you know, and they're a strong fish, and they're a little more easier to catch than trout. So people can still have a good time, but there's this thing: I want to catch a rainbow trout. I want to catch a brown trout. And if it's not conducive, or the fish might be hurt, we try to target other species.
So what bodies of water in the area do you believe have been most affected by climate change?
Bodies of water. Well, I mean, I primarily guide on the Esopus and over on the Beaverkill. So those two waters, which are both freestone rivers, they're influenced by tributaries of water coming out of the mountains. You know, and that they've been really, really affected. You know, we've had a really hard time with that. You know, not when the water goes low and we have giant rocks in the river. It's 85 degrees out. Those rocks act as, you know, like briquettes in a fire. They just stay hot all day and they warm the water, you know, and that's really bad, you know, for us.
Do you find yourself having to temper expectations? And would you say climate change requires you to do so?
Climate change doesn't come into that. On the Esopus, believe it or not, I primarily guide about 70 to 80% of the people never fly fished before, which is really a task, right? So look, some people are happy just to put on waders in the middle of the stream and go, I can't believe my feet aren't getting wet, right? Other people are always afraid of the sport. So I try to break it down in a way that manages their expectations. Talked about some basic rules of casting. And I usually do a little casting demo for them. Catching a fish is one thing. I have people that have strikes all the time, but there's an art to actually hanging on to that fish and managing your gear and listening to the guide to actually get that fish in, you know, because there's that moment of panic when a person's never caught a fish before. There's that moment of panic. What do I do? And I'm like, you're going to lose your first one because you're really going to screw it up. And when that happens, they go, yep, I screwed it up. I'm like, yeah, you see what you did? You did wrong. You drop your rod tip, the fish came right up. And they'll go, okay, I'm not going to do that again. So I fish mostly people who have never fly fished over here. Where on the other side of the Catskills, there's many more experienced anglers. And that's really nice working with those, with people like that, because I can just match the hatch for them, get them into some water. They can do all the basic casts. They can mend the line. You know, they're not going to spook the water. You know, they've kind of have a modicum of experience. And that's really nice, as opposed to changing flies all the time or getting the flies get out of the tree or picking them up out of the water.
Up next, you know what time it is? This week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. It's the beginning of March, and that means it's time we set our clocks forward 1 hour. Tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. marks the start of daylight saving time, and we will spring forward by setting our clocks ahead. While that means we will lose an hour of sleep tonight, it also means we will see more daylight during our waking hours. Daylight saving time does not increase the length of the day. That is set by the rotation of Earth. What daylight saving time does increase is the amount of time we are awake during daylight hours. This morning, the sun rose around 6:20 a.m., but tomorrow, the sun will rise around 7:20 a.m. The modern concept of daylight saving time came in 1895 when George Hudson, a New Zealand entomologist, proposed a two-hour time shift. It wasn't until the outbreak of World War I that daylight saving time was adopted as an energy-saving measure, shifting the clocks by 1 hour. Germany adopted the system in 1915, Britain in 1916, and the United States followed in 1918. In the U.S., daylight saving time lasted about 7 months before being repealed. It returned for good during World War II, again as an energy-saving measure. The original start date of daylight saving time was the last Sunday in April. Remember to spring forward tonight and set your clocks forward 1 hour before going to bed. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for that report. We'll take a short break, but when we come back, Eco Voices is bringing the voices of young Pennsylvanians together. Stay with us.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond.
Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Hi, this is Angela Page from Folk Plus. Tune in Sundays at 2 and hear contemporary singer-songwriters and their creative works all woven around a theme. That's Folk Plus, Sundays at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. All right, so earlier this week, I was actually at Sullivan West, the high school, for their college and career fair, and it was just so much fun. Love talking to young people about what ideas they have, what concerns they have, what solutions they have. And so I was really excited when Farming Country's Rosie Starr told us about this new initiative called Eco Voices. She chatted with Michelle Long of Sustainable Energy Education and Development Support, or SEEDS, about this project called Eco Voices that brings young people together to work on projects about sustainability, the environment, and our changing climate. Here's some of that conversation.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr at the 2026 Wayne County Ag Day inside the auditorium at the Honesdale High School. This event is a host of opportunities to speak with Penn State educators and agricultural enthusiasts. Included are exhibits to learn about new and innovative technologies.
My name is Michelle Long from SEEDS with Sustainable Energy Education, Development, and Support. And we're promoting a new program called Eco Voices. And it's an opportunity for high school students and college age students to communicate about what they're concerned about with the environment and maybe make some connections on these concerns and how we can address them. Basically, an opportunity for the youth to kind of get together and talk amongst themselves about the environment itself. It's a brand new program. We're looking for high school and college age students to join us, and it's all online. It's through Zoom, so we can do a video because we're covering a couple different areas. We're covering Pike, Monroe, Wayne, and Lackawanna areas. Yeah, we're excited to see what they have to talk about and things that they'd like to do. The one thing that we found over the last couple years is that there doesn't seem to be an opportunity for people in that age group to really talk about their own concerns. I mean, and where they can find resources to kind of work on projects that they're concerned about and that they want to work on. I mean, you hear a lot of stuff that, you know, the older folks want to hear about and everything, but there's really no place for the younger kids in our area to kind of connect with each other. So that's what this, we're hoping that's what this accomplishes.
Do you see an interest with young people either in high school or college for sustainable energy, for non-fossil fuel energy, renewable energy, solar energy?
Absolutely. The students that we've talked to over the last year, and we have a student that actually works for us part-time. She's our outreach assistant, and she talks to college students all the time, and they're concerned about how renewable energy seem to be, at a national level, seem to be going backwards. And there's a real concern on how that's going to impact their lives in the future. So I think the concern is there. I think the interest is there. I think they just are looking for a mechanism on how to manage that, how they can be engaged, and how they can make a difference, you know, in their own futures moving forward. So I'm excited to see what they bring to the table and how SEEDS can help them, you know, with the projects that they come up with and their ideas. When you work for a nonprofit that talks about sustainable living and renewable energies, it's nice to have a younger voice at the table and hear what their concerns are. And they may be the same, but they may bring a different perspective that we didn't think about. And that's what we're anxious to hear about.
Do you know of any organization or funding available for education going into the future for this?
Well, it's really going to depend on what the students bring to us. And then there are a couple state and federal funding potentially, but it's really going to depend on what the students want to focus on. And then we can take that, take it in that direction. So this is really going to be a youth-driven project. We're just a facilitator, so we're hoping to see what comes out of that. It's going to be an online discussion. You can go to the seedsgroup.net website and sign up. There's on our calendar of events, you can go in and click on the registration, so then we can send you a Zoom link so you can participate. So we've reached out to the local colleges and the local schools in our area, Western Wayne, Wayne Highlands, and Wallenpaupack, and the universities over in Scranton to hopefully garner some interest.
Is there any event that's coming up soon that you'd like to highlight?
The Eco Voices, the first online discussion is going to be March 11th online at 6 o'clock. We're looking for students in high school or in on college level because we want it to be their project. You know, there's other avenues that we can get input from folks in different ages. So we're kind of targeting those students who don't really have a voice right now. So
is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'm really excited to see what the students bring back to us. And I'm interested in hearing what their concerns are. I hear from a lot of people of an older generation like myself and what they're concerned about. But we really want to be able to deliver to everybody. You know, we want to provide renewable energy education to everyone. So we're hoping that we can get an idea from that age group what they'd like to see and then deliver on that. So,
on a personal note, what is it? What are your concerns?
On a personal note, I'm very concerned about the changes on a national level that are happening with the pollution reduction standards. It just makes no sense to me whatsoever for somebody who's worked in the conservation field for over 25 years. All the science points to the other direction, and it's very disheartening to see what's going on a national level.
What is your background?
I worked for 20 years for the Pike County Conservation District. I was there, the last 5 years I was their executive director. Then I've worked with Seeds now since 2024, but I've always lived a sustainable life and always promoted renewable energies and understand the actual impacts of climate change. So again, I'm just bewildered at where we are going on a national level, especially if you look at what's going on a global scale, where our neighbors and our peers across the world have made great strides with renewable energies, and it just makes no sense. So,
very well put. I appreciate your comments. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I appreciate you coming over and talking to me today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. It was nice talking to you.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr at Wayne County Ag Day inside the Honesdale High School in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. It's February 16th, and the room is filled, buzzing with activity.
Thanks to Rosie for that report. And that's all for this week's show. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Stick around. Up next, it's Catskill Character with Donna Fellenberg. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, NPR. Catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail. morgan-outdoors.com.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Alonzo Bowden couldn't quite believe that Survivor has reached 50 seasons.
I still have a big problem believing it's tough to survive when the camera crew is eating somewhere.
Yeah. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us